army doesn't like more than one disaster in a day.
Looks bad in the newspapers and upset civilians at their breakfast.
I'm Bill Buebert, retired Army officer and a regular warfare practitioner and scholar. Welcome to Chasing Ghosts, an Irregular Warfare podcast, the show that examines the mythos, lost history, bad thinking, martial malpractice, and government incompetence that informs so much of irregular warfare. Today, I want to peek behind the curtain at the vast machinery and briar patch politics of insurgency and counterinsurgency and everything in between. Now, let's go ghost hunting together.
Hello, this is Bill, and welcome to Chasing Ghost, an Irregular Warfare podcast. This is episode 078, Iran and I Lost, The American Empire Tilts Again, where we will discuss world events to include mostly Iran and other things that are going on planet-wide. And I wanted to do some housekeeping beforehand. You will note that the issuance of this podcast is well past the expiry date of the fortnightly cadence that I am fond of in issuing new podcast episodes. What could possibly be the explanation for that? Well, as with all things, it just so happens to be that it is a combination of a number of things. Number one, we moved the bunker complex from the Gulf Coast of Florida, Southwest Florida, up to the Florida Panhandle. We have since, during that time, since I last spoke to you in January, actually signed a purchase on a house. We'll be moving into that new bunker complex this month or next, and that's great. Well, the other fly in the ointment, as it were, is health difficulties that I have had. Just so happens that in 2014, at the young age of 53, despite having been a military athlete for the longest time, my genetics caught up with me and I suffered a myocardial infarction, a heart attack, in which a stent resulted from that. Since that time, I have had a clean bill of health, great cardiovascular performance, all the numbers read correctly. Last August, I had what is referred to as syncope, which is sort of like a fainting spell, which hadn't happened for 11 years, caused my wife and all of us to think that maybe the heart issues were back. Well, they put me up on the lift last year, did a very thorough diagnostic scan of my entire bod, and it turns out that my cardiac, respiratory health, and everything was spot on and very good for my age, which is very close to collecting socialist security now. And as a result of that, my standing heart rate has always been 55 to 65, personal best 42 at the peak of my military athletic efficacy at the time. And here we find that all of a sudden I have suffered somewhat of an incident. I will not bore you with the details, but it appears that I suffered a mini stroke last week, a transient ischemic attack. A TIA. It's a temporary blockage of blood flow to the brain, causing stroke-like symptoms such as sudden weakness, numbness, and confusion that typically lasts from a few minutes to a few hours. Now, one of the results of that was that I could sound rather drunken instead of the stellar articulation and elocution that I pride myself on. I sounded as if I had just stumbled out of an Irish pub after imbibing a little too much alcohol. And by the way, since last August, I have imbibed no alcohol because I have become abstemious when it comes to that. So the move, not knowing where my cheese is because everything is in disarray and storage and such, and the health problems last week have led to the late posting of this episode, which I hope for the remainder of this year not to repeat. If all of a sudden I go radio silent and you haven't heard from me in several weeks or even going on several months, maybe you'll find out that I have assumed room temperature. But with that, what we're going to do in this particular episode is we're going to tackle which over this weekend, and you will note with the issuance of this what weekend that is in this year of our Lord, 2026, that America apparently has decided to attack in concert with Israel, the country of Iran. Now, it just so happens that I have published episodes on this very thing. I published episodes 61 and 67, in which I did touch on Iran. I talked about the difficulty of mountainous terrain. I talked about ground combat, even soft forces, and the difficulty that they would encounter in this non-English-speaking country. And in those, I also covered, if I recall, what happened in 1953, 1979 in Iran, and what has caused the scheme of the world to be askew, as it were, since that time, since that devilish organization on the Potomac known as the CIA and its tentacled three-letter organizations throughout the U.S. government and the West, in concert with their analogs in European countries mostly, one finds that they have been scheming and gallivanting and engaging in Machiavellian palace whisper campaigns in order to destabilize said country since 1979, when the Shah of Iran took the Iranian tilt towards a secular state and turned it into a religious Shia state. Now, I'd like you to take something into consideration, because this is all about connections. Even that extraordinary British Bolshevik corporation show in the 1980s called Connections that I really enjoyed in my youth, and such, is that history is all about connections. History is all about, well, why did that happen prior to that, and how did that cause this cavalcade of calamities to occur at that time? Well, what we find is that Hamas in Gaza, which has been giving Israel the hardest time since the Nakba in 1948, when the Israelis at the time, the Jewish Zionists, whether they were Agana or Irgun or other goon elements of the Jewish proto-state developers at the time, slaughtered and annihilated men, women, and children in what was then not the state of Israel, but British Palestine, is that since that time, there has been a concerted effort to get rid of this carbuncle on the state of Israel, which is the state of Gaza. October 7th, 2023, inspired a series of podcast episodes that I did under something called Storming America. And I talked about what was going on there, what could happen possibly here in the United States. But I want to call your attention to that once again, because October 7th, 2023 provided the perfect vehicle for the Israelis to achieve what for decades, if not generations, they had sought to do, which is to ameliorate, annihilate, and obliterate the state of Gaza, the Palestinians as a tribe, as a religious enclave, as a religious power center, as in secular power center that was causing constant depredations against Israel and vice versa, and that they needed to find a way to destroy it. Well, it turns out that Hamas, which has also been aligned with Shia elements in Iran — now I say Shia elements because it's Sunni — when Hamas was formed, it was formed in 1987, founded then as a Sunni movement, and it's distinct from Shia groups and has previously suppressed smaller Shiite factions in Gaza until they discovered in this new 21st century that they could find a benefactor for materiel, training, and such in Iran, and accepted portions of Shia, or at least Shia assistance, into what they were trying to do against Israel, since it has always been a common enemy of Iran. As a matter of fact, it turns out that Benjamin Netanyahu funded Hamas for years, I think bordering on a decade, in order to put the Palestinian Liberation Organization on the back foot by having this internecine warfare and infighting going on in their political structure. Smart in the short term, not so smart in the long term, as it turns out. By the way, there is an ongoing campaign militarily as we speak in which there are carrier groups, which are all future fish apartments in this 21st century, by the United States. I think last count there were three of them near there. I'm certain that there are also SLBMs located, submarines, either cruise missiles, ballistic missiles, whatever the case may be. And all of these are there, I suspect, as is being reported, that there is an exchange of missilery between Israel, Iran, Bahrain, and United States military elements. I will not comment on that because I have a policy when it comes to military campaigns. If I had my way, I would only comment on them after 365 days have gone by, but I can't. So in the next episode, either I will devote the entire episode or a portion to it to my after-action review of what occurred militarily during this time. But I always find that to do that now is rather premature. And I am hoping, by the way, that in my Storming America series, I had said that this could be a trigger event for a sleeper cell emerging in the United States, or a number of sleeper cells, to wreak all kinds of havoc. And again, I hope that I am dead wrong. But a short PSA to all my listeners and their friends, family, colleagues, and everybody. This would be the time to keep your head on the swivel and have the appropriate preparations there. Because remember, the police are only hours away. All right, back over the target. So when it comes to Iran, I think that the entry drug for this entire affair, especially in this new iterative part of the project, remember what Wesley Clark said back in the late 90s about those seven nation states, that Israel wanted to have ameliorated and tucked away so that they were no longer a, quote, national security threat to the state of Israel, which concomitantly is a national security state to the United States itself, end of quote. By the way, a PSA to everybody, I am an America firster, so when I approach this, I look through that lens. I do not support the state of Israel. I am not anti-Semitic. I don't support the state of Israel. I don't support the state of Saudi Arabia. I think that the funding of covert action and clandestine action to conduct color revolutions overseas since the end of World War II has led to the state of the world we have now, and that the BRICS nations wouldn't exist if it weren't for U.S., if not Western, interference in the way the rest of the world works outside of that narrow slice of the globe. As I have said before, I am very concerned that in 47, 48, when the OSS was turned into the CIA, the Central Intelligence Organization, the Central Intelligence Agency, that organization under the Dulles brothers and others would turn into an organization for change around the world. It had two charters initially. One was a big analytical, heavy intellectual enterprise to examine what was going on around the world to inform diplomatic and political pressures from the United States and the West to the rest of the planet to keep the world at peace. And then a smaller, but metastasized into a cancerous, larger object was the clandestine and covert revolutionary complex that would emerge out of the operational parts of the CIA, the accompanying intelligence organizations. I think there are 17 or 18 right now as we speak under Tulsi Gabbard as the director of intelligence in the United States security establishment and such. As I mentioned, 1953 and the clandestine and covert color revolution operations there conducted by the CIA and most likely some military organizations led directly to 1979, which leads directly to this. Because in systems engineering, we have something that's called primary causes and secondary causes or root causes, and then proximate effects. In this, what you have is the root cause, which is American and, by extension, Western intelligence organizations using that clandestine covert means to conduct those color revolutions, to sort of shift the balance in either voting, power struggles, those kind of things, to turn them into regimes that are more friendly or neutral to the national security concerns of the West. And inevitably, it always turns out to be wrong and imbecilic. I wanted to point out something here that seems to be the elephant in the room, which is this constant refrain in the United States and the West about the nuclear capabilities of Iran. In order for a nation state to have plausible nuclear capabilities, it must not only have the enriched uranium weapons grade and all of the appropriate engineering capabilities to develop that warhead, but it also has to have what that warhead sits on, which is the missile technology to deliver to a circular error of probability that would let it be an accurate weapon system at terminus. Now, we've gone through missileology 101 in previous episodes, so I won't bore you with it here, but it also takes a number of other things. You have the warhead, you have the missile, and you have what's referred to as the golden thread, which is the capability to sustain this capacity with nukes. You would have the logistical tail, the financial tail, the engineering checks, the engineering staffing, the ability to produce said uranium and such. The question I have always scratched my head at is, why would Iran have to do any of this if they're aligned with the Chinese and the Russians? Well, the easy answer is, the Chinese and the Russians do not want the forensic signatures of a launched weapon to lead back to a technology that they either loaned or gave to Iran. Well, that's plausible. But nonetheless, I would submit to you, I would suggest to you, that what's happening now is Iran is on the cusp of having this indigenous capability to develop everything that it needs to put that missile in train and to send that missile up with a nuclear warhead equipped to shoot at its enemies. Okay, great. Let's suppose that happens. But let's suppose that for some reason they don't have it. And all this time, the Iranians are this close to nukes. The Iranians have been this close to an indigenous capability to build nuclear weapons, warheads, missiles, everything, even though one could deliver said nuclear missiles on a truck via all kinds of arterials in the Middle East to get near Israel proper, although the radiological signatures of such by the proper sniffing modalities would probably caught well before it reached the Israeli border. So again, I scratch my head and I say, well, is there a way around that forensic signature? Maybe, maybe not. But here's what I'm telling you, is that much as we lease, and I know my Brits in the audience are going to flip their lid when I say this, much as the UK leases all of its nuclear warhead technology from the United States and certain very large manufacturing firms here in the United States in the military-industrial complex, it appears that that same leasing program could occur there. In the case of the United Kingdom, they do not have an indigenous capability to create and maintain nuclear warheads and Trident missiles in this case. The only modality that the British have as far as a nuclear deterrent capability is going to be submarine launch ballistic missiles. By the way, over the past 5 years, whenever those things have been test launched, it has been a disaster. But that is an episode for another day on why the United Kingdom is actually a third world country with one first world city, London, teetering on the brink of graduating to third world shit holiness. But like I said, that's a topic for another day. But what if the BRICS countries, Russia, China, were to broadcast to the world that they had shifted their nuclear program to such that they started leasing them out to member nations of the BRICS, to include Brazil, where they would have that capability? I think that there are diplomatic imbroglios that could occur as a result of that. The West may feel themselves agitated enough to send in whatever forces, clandestine, covert, soft, or otherwise, to ameliorate that problem by eliminating those. Hasn't happened in North Korea, has it? Does one really think that North Korea's nuclear program hasn't borrowed a little bit, if not a lot, from the Chinese through various means? So the point that I would make here is that any time one hears that the Iranian nuclear weapons program, well, it's not now. It was alive and well. It was prospering. As a matter of fact, they developed both the warhead and the missile and the appropriate CEP to make it a threat to everybody on planet Earth. That bugbear is always elevated during times of strife in the West. Or Israel. Oh no, Iran has nukes. They have been within months, weeks, days, hours of having said capability. But I would urge all of my listeners to do something strange, which is take a look at a map. Now, you're looking at that map. Those of you who are driving, please don't look at a map. You're going to see the Russian Federation, a massive country. As a matter of fact, the largest country on Earth, dominating in that Mercator projection. Then you're going to see Mongolia below. You're going to see Kazakhstan below. Below Mongolia, connecting very slightly with Russia, is China. Below that, you will find India. Then where Kazakhstan is in the western portion of the Russian Federation, they share a border with Uzbekistan, which shares a border with Turkmenistan. And Turkmenistan just so happens to share a border with Iran. And then, of course, we know that to the east of Iran is Afghanistan, and it is buttressed in the west against Iraq, which is a next-door neighbor, as it were, not contiguously, to Israel. When you look at that map, maps are destiny. Angles are what determines how one wins a fight for the most part. And maps are destiny, because when one looks at this map, you find that in Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, Turkmenistan, and these other countries that are very close to Iran, those countries are direct arterials to the Russian Federation. So let's suppose that somehow, some way, and all I'm doing is suspending my disbelief, the United States and the Western countries managed to take this nuclear scourge off the map. And all of a sudden, Iran has no nuclear capability or capacity whatsoever. Well, what if they did lease nukes from the BRICS countries, Russia, China? What if said Iranian nukes were never in Iranian hands, but they just so happened to be leased variants in a parking garage on brick soil? As a matter of fact, I may be offering an option for the Iranians. I'm certainly that the Persians, being rather intellectually savvy themselves, have already considered this. But what if Russia and China said to their BRICS nations, not only will we provide you with a nuclear umbrella so that you are never screwed around with by the West, but maybe we would even come up with a novel leasing arrangement, much like we have with the UK, in which you have missiles. And there's two variants of this leasing proposition. The first variant of said leasing proposition is that all of a sudden the Iranians have a very mature rocketry, a very mature missile warhead modality, along with solving those CEP problems, whether it is an intermediate range ballistic missile or an intercontinental ballistic missile. Or it becomes a China, Russia, Brazilian-based, Iranian-marked and segregated missile set in which the Iranians would say, well, it's time for us to launch. What this would do is a couple things. Number one, it would remove the targeting of actual Iranian ground from the chessboard altogether and shift it to these very large BRICS countries, these mature military combines that are China and Russia, and to a certain extent, Brazil. All of a sudden, harkening back to the entangling alliances that George Washington warned us about in the late 18th century, these entangling alliances in the BRICS countries would create a proxy nuclear capability for all members of BRICS nations, regardless of their nuclear arsenal capacity. All this takes is a guarantee. All this takes is a guarantor in the case of the Russians, for instance, who would say that if you choose to invade Iran and Iran has subscribed to our nuclear deterrent service and they have created an element of uncertainty in the Western diplomatic calculus of dealing with Iran. All of this is entirely speculative. And as I mentioned earlier, I know that everybody is concerned about what my opinion may be on the actual military campaign that is transpiring tactically and operationally as we speak. But as I mentioned, I don't want to speak to that right now until I have more data. As a matter of fact, as I have mentioned in previous episodes, one of the frustrations I have with the Ukraine-Russia war is that it is the first war in my adult life paying attention to these kind of things as a professional observer of conflict in which I don't know quite what to believe, and I suspect, even subject to language constraints, that is going to be the same case here. What I'm trying to get across to you is that when it comes to international relations, what we're dealing with here is actual GD anarchy. This is an anarchic state between all of these 200 plus nation states around the world. And we never know when these moves on the chessboard are going to cause some kind of unintended consequence. They're going to cause second and third order effects that not everybody game dayed on game day of what's going to happen. That was my concern with Venezuela. It is my concern with this. Per Venezuela, I am convinced, for a variety of reasons, that Maduro was a voluntary expatriate. I think that arrangements were made for Maduro to seek exile in more comfortable circumstances, much as Uganda's evil Idi Amin got in Saudi Arabia until he assumed room temperature. I think the same thing is happening here. I am disappointed in this administration in that they are using war as the means to get this, because I was rather buoyed in the first Trump term, in which here was the first president in my lifetime who had not started a new war. I mean, if we go back to the Obama administration, despite the amnesia and whitewashing in the coprophile media, what we discover is not only did Obama maintain the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq despite his promises otherwise during his campaigning, but he expanded on behalf of his Islamic clients and pets the wars into Yemen, Syria, and Libya. As a matter of fact, Donald Trump welcomes a head chopper from Al-Qaeda, who is now the president of Syria, into the White House. As a matter of fact, said head chopper visited New York approximately 23 years after their Al-Qaeda's first visit to New York on 9/11. These alliances of convenience, where one finds American arms allying themselves with Al-Qaeda and affiliates and other Muslim prevaricators, both Sunni and Shia, to cause mischief in the Middle East and such. And as I would think, the blowback that has occurred from the Muslim world is a direct result of U.S. and Western involvement in screwing around in the Middle East and creating the circumstances under which these blows from there land in Western nations and such. And then, of course, we have the concomitant problems that one has. We haven't covered this here, and we're probably not going to cover it today, but the illegal immigration, the MAMs, the military-age males who are flooding into Europe under the most nefarious circumstances and invitations from leftist leaders in Western Europe and such, none of this is going to end well culturally or militarily. So back to what I am nattering on about when it comes to Iran. This whole shibboleth of a nuclear Iran is one that just doesn't hold any water for me as far as a threat to Israel. As I mentioned earlier in this episode, in October 2023, when the attack occurred from Gaza into Israel proper, Israel used this as the marker by which they could finally assail and terminate this eternal and persistent enemy in their west, in Gaza, and they have done a fairly good job of that. But in order to further emasculate their enemies, both contiguous and non-contiguous, surrounding Israel proper, they had to find ways to provide a trigger for the United States to get involved. In this administration, as the previous administration, as a matter of fact, one could go back to the LBJ administration to find that that was the one that particularly cemented this relationship in which the U.S. would act as military janissaries for Israel's operational and strategic goals, both, as I mentioned, contiguous and non-contiguous, to the health and maintenance of their apartheid state. By the way, I'm not picking favorites here. I do think the Palestinians have the beef. By the way, I do think the Israelis have a beef. By the way, I think all Middle Easterners have a beef. Well, as a matter of fact, that beef would be with Woodrow Wilson and Winston Churchill, because all of this goes back to the map that they laid out at the beginning of the 20th century. But that's for another episode. Nonetheless, the point that I'm making here is that that provocation by Gaza, whether it was originating from there or elsewhere, one would be troubled by discovering that Hamas had gained so much funding from the Israeli government and involvement by Mossad and Shin Bet. So you will note that the Schwerpunkt, the center of gravity, the raison d'etre that the West is constantly beating the drum on when it comes to Iran is we cannot allow Iran to have a nuclear capability. Well, I am here to tell you, RAND Corporation, heads up, it doesn't matter if Iran has a nuclear capability, or India, or Pakistan, or any other nations that are out there have that nuclear capability, as long as there are competing modalities of nuclear-armed states out there. If I recall, I think of all the nuclear-armed states It is only Pakistan that separates their missiles from their warheads for, in my mind, obvious non-sectarian reasons. But if one examines all of these missiles that are available out there and the way the nuclear chessboard works, one doesn't have to have 5,000, one doesn't have to have 500, one doesn't have to have 100 missiles. If you have several available, what it becomes is a prisoner's dilemma between the competing nations that are nuclear-armed states, in which they take a decision on, if they launch first and we launch in reprisal, how many will we be able to make land in their laps before they make them land in our laps? In the end, despite the tens of billions of dollars that have been spent by the planet since Hiroshima and Nagasaki in August 1945 to determine how nuclear chicken would take place, we know it is a rather simple recipe. So, as you know, I am fundamentally opposed to the U.S. military going around the world and doing what it does unless it is directly attacked by a foe. Not through maritime provocation, not through blowback as a result of what America and Western militaries have done, whether in the Middle East or in Africa or whatever the case may be. I am simply opposed to military action because I don't think it ever ends very well. In this case, what I propose, what I suggest is this, is that as a result of this, and no one can know this with surety and certitude, all of a sudden, Iranian nuclear aspirations, their programs and everything, are just turned to cinder. They're turned to ash. They no longer have that capability. I am of a mind that if a nation state determines it needs nuclear weapons, it need not do so. All it needs to do is ally itself with the BRICS or the allied nations and urge them to place them under a nuclear umbrella. That nuclear umbrella can either be through that entangling alliance, a declaration of intent by that country under which they are assuming that nuclear protection, that they would help them if a time of military need took place. Or the new arrangement could be, and maybe it's just a subtle rearrangement in this case, where they lease said missiles from China or Russia. By the way, the same thing could happen in France, in the UK, in the United States. Japan could lease missiles from the United States. I am of a mind that Japan should be not only a nuclear power, but a nuclear weapons power. I hold the Japanese in the highest esteem when it comes to their military capabilities. You will find that when tanks were a thing, their armor, which you don't hear much about in this numbered armor, would be in the top five in Armor magazine. Their armed forces, ground forces, naval forces, air forces, there is considerable talent for war in the Japanese. We've seen that go awry, of course, between 1932 and 1945, but that certainly doesn't mean that that is the signature determination of how that country will behave in the future, as we've discovered with America, for instance, or even with the Russians and the Chinese. So I'm suggesting that we are in a new age here. We are in a new nuclear age where various diplomatic and military concerns around the world will take into consideration these two variants on the possibility. An entangling alliance, and this goes back hundreds of years, or the leasing of nuclear weapons that are actually still in the country of origin by an external or third-party country to have those nuclear weapons at their disposal. Now, when one looks at that map that I was talking about, you find that Iran just so happens to be, well, geopolitically, a stone's throw from Turkmenistan, Uzbekistan, Kazakhstan, but also the Russian Federation, but also China. Who knows what the future portends? I do think that when it comes to the BRICS countries and what they're going to do with their nuclear arsenals as a deterrent capacity in strategic and grand strategic chessboards around the planet, this will occur. I am almost assured, as I've been thinking about this, that this is going to be the way of the world for this remaining century, as far as nuclear arms are concerned. Now, I mentioned earlier I was not going to talk about, since this is being recorded over the weekend prior to its issuance on Monday morning, that I would not speak to the tactical and operational flavors of what appears to be going on in this military contest in Iran. But I would leave you with this simple suggestion. Don't believe anything you see in the news concerning this particular conflict, whether it is an unblemished victory by the United States and the West and Israel, or a cavalcade of calamities leading to defeat by either the West or Iran. You better allow things to steep and cook and see what happens and leave your reservations in place and take a determination on exactly what you think happened afterwards, maybe weeks, if not months afterwards, to get a proper analytical understanding, not awareness, understanding of what happened and what's going to happen. That concludes this episode. As I told you, I am recovering from a health difficulty, and at times, as my wife has indicated and my family, Bill, you appear to be drunken and you haven't even had the devil's water, as it were, to do that very thing. So I am recovering. I am hoping that you will provide me a little bit of grace when it comes to this, if my elocution and articulation isn't quite up to speed. No, I haven't been drinking. In other news, if you wish to support this podcast, please become a paid subscriber. I have instituted a new thing that I'm going to do, which is that my paid subscriber will receive my episodes 24 hours before the public does, as it were. Shout out to my 55 paid subscribers. Thank you so much for your support. I also provide them with what's called a CG microburst, which is like a 15, 20, 25 minute episode that is more of a Jack Kerouac style stream of consciousness, book recommendations, maybe historical musings, those kind of things. If you like this podcast, please, please leave 5 stars on the podcast vendor that you are employing. If you leave me a narrative spread that says how wonderful or great you think this may be, I am forever in your debt. If you wish to get in touch with me, go to cgpodcast@pm.me. If you wish to discuss the various episodes, go to my Substack, and on that Substack, you will find the episode posted. And on the episode posted, you will find a comments page at the bottom. And please, I urge all of my listeners to engage me in questions, suggestions, recommendations, and best of all, gentlemanly disagreement on things that I've said, because believe me, I am not perfect. I am a very imperfect and fallen being. And if it just so happens that your evidence and your arguments are superior to mine, you may change my mind on something, and that's good for me, that's good for you. So I know this appears to be a shorter podcast. Give me a few fortnights of recovery as we consolidate our winnings here on the Florida Panhandle. And yes, I am an OG Floridian born in Miami. As a matter of fact, I'm probably one of 250 people in the state who is from this state. But nonetheless, we're getting situated, purchased a new bunker complex. I'm going to continue on, and I can't call it a promise, because who knows what's going to happen in the next interregnum of 2 weeks. But I do want to provision you with a detailed military analysis of this latest campaign against Iran on behalf of Israel, and maybe I'll do that this next time. So, for those of you listening, thank you so much. Pass this on to friends, families, colleagues, whoever you think may find this interesting, or those who need help getting to sleep because you find this so dull, recommend it to them as a solution to their insomnia. So, this is Bill, out.